This webcast is made possible in part by support from the listener members of the Classical Network, WWFM and WWFM.org. Thank you for your support.
Hello, and welcome to Sounds Choral, a program that seeks to present the vast body of choral repertoire in a way that is intelligible, relevant, entertaining, and hopefully uplifting. I'm your host, James Jordan of Westminster Choir College. This week's program is devoted to one of the giants of the choral profession, Swedish conductor Erik Eriksson. For conductors who came of age in the 70s, 80s, and 90s, the recordings of the Swedish Radio Choir and the Swedish Kammerchor on the virtuosic choral literature recordings conducted by Erik Eriksson literally transformed the world of choral sound and choral performance. For many of us, our most prized collection of LPs was affectionately called the Blue Box, because it was like our audio Bible. The recordings of Debussy, Ravel, Britten, Schoenberg, Martin, Brahms, and Reger raised the choral profession to not only new levels, but for the first time gave the world a recorded legacy of what truly, even to this day, is the example of virtuosic choral artistry. Those recordings, again to this day, are still considered iconic of all the literature contained on that box set. Specifically, the recordings in that set of Schoenberg Friedauf Erden, the Richard Strauss Deutsche Motet, and the Frank Martin Mass are recordings that have become truly iconic models of artistry in choral ensemble singing across the world. And ironically, this year, 2018, marks the 100th anniversary of Maestro Eriksson's birth. Here is some biographical information about Erik Eriksson. Erik Eriksson was the distinguished Swedish choral conductor and pedagogue, and he acquired his widespread musical education in the Stockholm Conservatory, in the Schola Cantorum of Basel, Switzerland, and in Germany, England, and the United States. Erik Eriksson was the conductor of three excellent chamber choirs. He formed the Stockholm Chamber Choir in 1949, renamed in 1988 to be called the Erik Eriksson Chamber Choir. This group has remained his main instrument for developing the art of a cappella choral singing ever since. In 1951, the Swedish Radio Choir was formed on his initiative, and the post as its principal conductor and artistic leader was held by him until 1982. During the years 1951 to 1991, he was also principal conductor and artistic leader of the noted male choir Offre Drenga, based in Uppsala, Sweden. Since his retirement from his post as principal conductor of the Swedish Radio Choir in 1982, Professor Eriksson gave numerous master classes around the world. He also guest conducted many leading vocal groups such as the Netherlands Chamber Choir, the BBC Singers, the Rios Chamber Choir, the Vienna State Opera Choir. He also conducted numerous performances of larger works with leading orchestras and choirs in Europe, Australia, the United States, Hong Kong, Japan. He frequently collaborated with conductors like Riccardo Muti and Nicholas Harnoncourt and their respective orchestras. Erik Eriksson was, for the great majority of choral conductors and choral singers throughout the world, the unsurpassed master in the field of choral conducting. His entire career was devoted to choral music. His work not only gave him great acclaim to his own choirs, but significantly contributed to a breakthrough in establishing the status and merit of choral music making in the world. In 1995, he received the coveted Nordic Council Music Prize. Erik Eriksson passed away in 2013. On a personal note, I studied with Erik Eriksson in Stockholm for a month in the early 80s. I also worked and observed him during residencies at Bucknell University. So I consider myself deeply fortunate to have worked with him and have been not only influenced by his teaching, but was touched by his warmth, generosity, and graciousness. Today's program offers listeners to Sounds Choral a unique perspective through one of his most famous students, American conductor Gary Graydon. Gary has spent his entire career at St. Jakob's Church in Stockholm, and with that choir has recorded his own legacy in recordings from the Bach Passions to the Bach Motets to the music of Scandinavian composers. Gary Graydon has been on the faculty of the Westminster Choral Institute for many years. He is a pioneer in the field of choral improvisation and is recording chant improvisations with the Westminster Williamson Voices this coming January. Last summer, Gary Graydon served on the faculty of the Choral Institute at Oxford at St. Stephen's House, where he taught chant improvisation. So, he and I had a chance to sit down and remember his teacher, mentor, and friend, Erik Eriksson. So here we are at St. Stephen's House at Oxford University. We're taking a respite from the Choral Institute that has a Westminster-based operation where 30 conductors come and study. And it's my thrill. Gary has been here to do some things in choral improvisation, and it's a thrill for me to sit down. We don't often get time to sit down together, so this has been a real luxury. This program we're devoting to his teacher, Eric Erickson. And I think by way of introduction, I think every American choral conductor or conductors around the world of our generation, and maybe just before, we lived by those recordings. I remember we all call it the Blue Box, but now it's been reissued on CD in the five centuries of choral music. But
so you and there went, was another one. There were two big boxes. The other one was Virtuosic, Virtuose Chor Musique.
Yes.
Similar production with, of course, continued repertoire. Just great repertoire of the middle of last century. And
so tell our listeners how you got to Stockholm.
I finished the program, the master's program, at the Hart School of Music, where you and I had also met many years ago. And instead of just getting on, continuing into a doctoral program somewhere, I just wanted to take time and listen to the best choirs that I could think of, or the ones that were at that time very important for us all. And so I sort of followed my ears, you could say. My ears led the way. And I wanted to go to Stockholm to hear Mr. Erickson's choirs. I had heard basically one or two recordings with the chamber choir, Eric's chamber choir. And at that time also, of course, Helmut Rilling was very important for us. That was would be the second stop. And I had been in touch with both Eric and with Mr. Rilling. And the third stop, I wanted to go to Vienna to hear Hanenkur, to try to get to hear rehearsals and performances with Hanenkur, because at that time it was so revolutionary, this change in the performance and the practice of performance of Baroque music. So I went thinking I would stay for 3 months. The visa that was available at that time was a three-month tourist visa, and I said, okay, I'll go for 3 months. And Eric was gracious. He sent me back a little message after I had written to him. He says, yes, you're welcome to come, and you can hear my rehearsals and so forth. And so I showed up there in the autumn of, this is, my goodness, 1982. And he was most gracious and most generous. He told me what he was doing, his daily rehearsals, and I followed him around. After a few weeks, I approached him. It was in his kitchen, in his apartment, where we sat together. It was so lovely.
I've been there,
yeah.
Too.
Armfelsgatan,
the little table.
Exactly. <Yeah. laughs> We were drinking coffee, and he was eating a little piece of knäckebröd, this little hard bread with something on it, just something light. And I said, Eric, you know, I'd just love to be an active student in your class. I had been already for some weeks. I'd got to know the students. And he said, you know, you cannot do that. You can't just hop in like that. I thought that perhaps as I did also in the States, you know, you could pay a tuition and take a six-week course of study with various conductors. I did it with several different schools in New England as I was preparing for the master's program. But that doesn't exist in most places in Europe, or particularly at that time. And Eric said, I'm sorry, Gary. The only chance is that you audition for a place in the course of studies for the following year. So I stayed longer than my visa allowed, and in March I auditioned for this course of study, which was, you could call it, it was the class of the advanced conducting class, mm-hmm. for choral conducting and orchestral conducting, and I was accepted. And so I said, by George, I'm going to stay here, and I want to study with this guy. And so I stayed on. I went back over the summer, and I applied for a longer visa, a longer permission to stay. And I applied also for a scholarship from the Swedish Institute, and I stayed for a 2-year intensive course of study, tuition-free, which for me was amazing. Wow. I said, I would pay, you know, of course, like we do. We Americans, you know, we pay these big tuitions, and I would gladly have paid for that. But no, that's just not the way the system worked there. So I got in, and I studied with him. But also, actually, soon after I arrived, before even this was set with the class for conducting, I started singing with him. So soon after I got there in October, in January, I already was singing with the chamber choir of the conservatory. And soon after that, was invited to sing with his chamber choir, his professional choir. And so I was like, oh my goodness, I was like in heaven. And I also, this with Harlan Coe was interesting, because the very first project that his chamber choir was involved in when I arrived there in October of 82 was The Messiah with Harlan Coe. So I was going into these rehearsals and I was saying, oh my God, this is just so perfect to be here listening to this beautiful choir, which I wanted to hear close up, to have the chance to meet, of course, Mr. Erickson, and here was Concentus Musicus and Nicholas Hanenfuhr. So it was like this incredible watershed of experience right at that moment. Later I had the opportunity to, when I was singing with the chamber choir and Eric, we went for a series of concerts in Stuttgart to work with Gechinger, Cantorai, and Mr. Rilling. That was just 2 years later, and then I realized that in fact I made the right choice. It felt for me that I made really the right choice to stay in Stockholm, and I felt that the way of making music and the values and the whole experience was something that was much more suitable to me than what I heard with that choir and in that interpretation of particularly Baroque music.
So let's pause now to listen to a track of the iconic CD titled European Choral Music with Eric Erickson and his legendary Stockholm Chamber Choir from the CD titled European Choral Music, reissued on the Warner Classics label. We will sample first the Kyrie from the Frank Martin Mass for Double Choir, a work he championed and brought around the world.
Thank you.
That was the Kyrie from the Frank Martin Mass, sung by the Stockholm Chamber Choir, conducted by Eric Erickson on the Warner Classic CD box set, European Choral Music. Now let's return to our conversation with Gary Graydon as we share our memories of Eric Erickson and learn more about his life and his legacy. Well, you and I were talking last evening, and I have to go back in my travel receipts. But I went to Stockholm on Eric's invitation to come and visit like you. I did not stay that long, clearly. But I think it was 3 or 4 weeks. I just hung around.
Yeah.
And I went primarily to the conservatory and listened to those rehearsals. And trying to decipher what it is that he does.
Mm.
And I must say, what he does is a lot of Eric, this kind, generous man.
Mm-hmm.
And this incredible ear that doesn't get in the way of singers, but reminds them what they should be listening to. Mm. Is that a good summary? Mm. I mean, I was impressed with when there was an issue, he always approached it harmonically.
Mm.
He wanted the singers to understand how they fit in this structure. But it was so communal that you didn't feel like he was... You felt like he was your grandfather that mm. happened to be leading this group. And then he took me up to his men's choir in mm-hmm. Uppsala.
Yes, Orfei Drengar, the men of Orfei.
I have never heard anything like that in my
extraordinary.
Life.
Extraordinary, yeah.
And he says, well, this is a good choir, but you need to come up here. Mm-hmm. And I will never forget this. Extraordinary music making among men who are laborers, just common people.
Yeah.
That this great conductor would spend his time mm. with these people mm. and in a generous way.
But yes. And make them great also, because they were really, they had a wonderful, marvelous career with Eric and with the subsequent conductors who were there.
If you had to summarize, we can't go on for hours, but what are the essential things about Eric that people need to remember? Because he passed how many years ago?
He died 5 years ago.
Five.
He was 93 at that time, yeah. Well, I mean, there are many dimensions to this, of course, and there are so many dimensions to our art, you know. Obviously, this is...
Yeah.
There is the personal dimension of who he was as a person. He was extremely generous. He was a very humble person. I was always touched by his humility. It was never really about him so much as he was devoted to doing his work, his craft, to interpret desires, interpret the scores, interpret the symbols, and then as most honest and satisfying and artistically fulfilling way as he could. When I went into his classroom the first time, of course, it was a great moment, and I was thinking, oh, you know, Dr., Professor, Mr. Erickson, and I realized soon after that he was Eric for everyone. He was Eric for his singers, for his different choirs, for his students. There was no pretense there. He was born in a family with a lot of music. He was the son of a minister, a Swedish minister, I think it was in Gotland, where he lived his first years. And so he grew up in this Lutheran tradition of singing hymns and singing and choral music. He was a marvelous, marvelous pianist.
Really? I didn't know that.
I mean, really, he could play, he could surely study the organ and piano. He could do really anything. He could improvise 2 and 3 part fugues, and he would use the piano so intelligently, not just playing and that is to say spoon feeding his singers. These are the tones you've been. He would play always the other parts. He would play the parts that were not singing. You know, he would use the piano to give impulse, to give an idea. And he would play Bach sometimes like Boogie Woogie, you know, or he would play some kind of jazz riff. And people would just wake up and they say, oh, yes, it would be light. And, you know, something like giving it life, some particularly difficult part, you know, something. And this was one of his tools.
Let's take a pause in my conversation with Gary Graydon on Eric Erickson to listen to the amazing performance by Eric Erickson and the Stockholm Chamber Choir of the Benjamin Britten Hymn to St. Cecilia. The text Britten said is by W.H. Auden, and the soprano soloist is Marianne Malnas. This recording is part of a box set being featured on today's Sounds Choral program, European Choral Music, and was reissued from the original vinyl EMI recordings on the Warner Classics label.
Thank you.
That was a performance of the Britten Hymn to St. Cecilia by the Stockholm Chamber Choir, conducted by Eric Erickson. Now, let's return to the conversation with Erickson student American conductor Gary Graydon about Eric Erickson's relationship with Ricardo Muti and a discussion of the Eric Erickson quote-unquote sound and the Swedish choral singing tradition.
Of course, he was a great musician. His sense of intonation, of course, was important. His understanding of harmonic motion and harmonic and tonal relations. The idea of his of tuning and intonation was something that was part of his work, and it was that also which was somehow, you could say, in its way revolutionary. This quality of sound, this body of sound from a slightly smaller choir, the chamber choir,
yes,
size, 32 singers. The radio choir was 32, his chamber choir 32, not the larger oratorio choirs that had been what we had, what they had grown out of. It had been this tradition of singing, but this more refined chamber musical approach to music, it was something that was very particular and something that was very attractive. Clarity of sound, a clarity of tone. This became very appealing for composers. The sound, the quality of sound, and the excellent musicianship. That, this is yet another dimension. His unbelievable curiosity. He was curious about so many things, and of course, new music, always.
Well, that was so impressive at the time. I mean, he was, even at the time, the Frank Martin Mass was not a particularly well-known piece.
No,
in the
no,
repertoire.
No.
And here he is recording that. And also things of the repertoire that nobody would touch, like Reger.
Yes.
O Todvi Bitterbisto.
Yes.
Nobody would touch that piece. Schoenberg Frieda auf Erden, which at that point was not in kind of the choral canon.
Right, exactly.
In the mainstream. Mm. And he told me a story one time that the radio choir was asked to do a Mozart Requiem with Muti. You said the number of singers was 30.
Well, I was there.
Well, what Eric...
We were 64.
64, and I think the story goes that Muti said, well, that's just not enough singers.
Exactly.
Isn't that true?
That's absolutely true. This was in 80. So I was not in the choir exactly this first time, the first meeting with Muti. It was going to be, it was Quattro Pezzi Sacri.
Yes.
Verdi. And Muti said, no, 64 singers is not enough. Please call London, we bring in a choir or somewhere, we need another choir. And somehow Eric persuaded...
to at least give a listen.
Mr. Muti give a listen. And the story, as it goes, that Eric said, okay, come on now, go for it. You know, sing the loudest measures in the Sanctus there when it just, everything opens. And... Mr. Muti was immediately satisfied. It was perfect. And that was the beginning of a most marvelous collaboration and friendship.
That recording is still one of my favorites.
Mm.
Still one of my
and
favorites.
Then there was. And then I got in there, so I did with Mr. Muti. We did. He was our friend in a way. There was a beautiful rapport between the choirs and Mr. Muti, and we would talk, and he would be very friendly. We did the Mozart Requiem, we did the C minor Mass, we did the B minor Mass. Can you imagine that? The Baroque music with Muti was extraordinary, you know, stylistically, very particular. And we had that same year performed with Hanenkur, we had performed the Maria, the Vesper of 1610 of Monteverdi. These contrasts were amazing, but with Muti, it was really very, very passionate and extremely expressive. And we performed in La Scala and in the Vatican and Rome and Berlin.
Well, I remember his first appearance with the choir at an ACDA convention kind of sent ripples throughout the United States.
Mm.
And I think one of the things that people since have tried to copy that sound, and I think what people don't understand, that's Eric, that's Sweden, that's a singing culture. Was the Swedish Radio Choir on the radio weekly or biweekly or occasionally?
Well, I don't know if there was any regular program with choral music, but they were in the radio and they were performing. Of course, the radio was recording their works and broadcasting their performances.
Because I had a friend who passed away. She was actually a secretary at Princeton for Oppenheimer, but I had her son in high school. And she would tell me as a young girl in Sweden, that was regular diet to listen to the Swedish Radio Choir.
Yeah, I mean, you have to remember this, that Eric was not he didn't create the Swedish choral tradition. There is a great tradition of choral singing, there still is. But Eric was the personification of this. He took this beautiful tradition of singing that is prevalent in basically all parts of society there, children and youths and adults and older. But he, through his work, incredible, incredible work, and his devotion, was able to bring all this up to a new artistic level. You could say he was the personification of this great tradition.
Let's now listen to one of my favorite tracks of this recording by Eric Erickson. This is a seldom performed work by Johannes Brahms for double choir, the Festengedichtbuch Opus 109. This is taken again from the Warner Classic CD reissue of the original vinyl recordings on EMI, entitled European Choral Music Sung by the Stockholm Chamber Choir under the brilliant direction of Eric Erickson.
Oh.
That was the Johannes Brahms work for double choir, Festengedenkspruch, Opus 109. This is from the Warner Classics CD reissue of the original vinyl recordings on EMI entitled European Choral Music, sung by the Stockholm Chamber Choir under the direction of Eric Erickson. Let us now go back for the conclusion of my chat with Gary Graydon on Eric Erickson and his experiences with this renowned conductor.
Of course, there were many, many other great choirs in Sweden and many other great conductors. And, of course, some of them fell under the shadow of Eric, but it was unavoidable at that time. He was at the radio with the radio choir. He was at his chamber choir, at the chamber choir of the conservatory, was teaching at the conservatory, and he had Orfe Drenga, the male choir.
Male choir, yes.
So every day there were new rehearsals and new projects and tours. And I mean, it was just extraordinary how he could somehow manage all of this, organize his time in this way, on the highest level, highest artistic level. But I want to go back to his curiosity. This was, of course, part of his job at the radio also. At that time, there was a very strong music department at the Swedish radio. I'm talking about the 50s, 60s, and then into the 70s when these great recordings came. And there it was important for them. Their mission, among others, was to commission new music and to engage the best composers of Sweden and in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, the radio also had, there was a quite a good budget for that. So the best, the Swedish composers, best Swedish composers were composing for these instruments that suddenly were not like singing societies of just friends that like to sing together. This was very, very professional, interpretations, and the composers could write for these choirs that could handle it technically and musically and vocally. And it opened new ground, new work. This is the example for all of us that the composers are infinitely important. They show us the way. They lead us. They help us learn new things.
Yeah.
And without that relationship, without that process, then we're only... then our art becomes like a museum. We just only are keeping the music of the past. We need this.
It's extraordinary singing, even this day. Even with that technology of recording, they're still exceptional. So,
great. Thank you, Jim.
You're welcome.
As we go out on today's Sounds Choral, I would like to close this program on the legacy in recorded music conducted by Eric Erickson with an iconic recording of the Thomas Tallis epic motet, Speminalium in 40 Parts, with the Stockholm Kammerchor on the box set recording on the Warner Classics label of virtuosic European choral music. I'd like to thank my guest today, Gary Graydon, conductor of the St. Jakob's Chamber Choir in Stockholm. I would invite you to join me next week on Sounds Choral because I will once again chat with my friend Gary Graydon on his new recording, which I so admire, of Handel's Messiah. Sounds Choral is a program produced at the studios of WWFM, the Classical Network, David Osenberg, producer. I'm your host, James Jordan of Westminster Choir College. You can listen to any recent Sounds Choral program by going to our website, wwfm.org, and clicking on Classical and Webcasts. You can also support programming like this with a donation and membership at our website. Thank you so much for listening today. Sounds Choral is an exclusive production of the award-winning Classical Network and WWFM.org.